The Midnight Myth Podcast presents The Wheel of Ka, an exploration into the writings of Stephen King. What started as two friends rereading The Dark Tower has turned into an exploration of Stephen King's writing writ large. This episode, Steve and I talk Stephen King's Misery.
In the dark, rationality seems stupid and logic a dream. In the dark, he thought with his skin. He kept seeing the trooper coming back to life, some sort of life. Out in the barn, sitting up, the loose hay with which Annie had covered him falling to either side of him and into his lap, his face plowed into bloody senselessness by the mower's blade. Saw him crawling out of the barn and down the driveway to the bulkhead, the torn streamers of his uniform swinging and fluttering. Saw him melting magically through the bulkhead and reintegrating his corpse's body down here. Saw him crawling across the packed dirt floor, and the little noises Paul heard weren't rats, but the sound of his approach. And there was but a single thought in the cooling clay of the trooper's dead brain. You killed me. You opened your mouth and killed me. You threw an ashtray and killed me. You cock-a-doodie son of a bitch. You murdered my life.
Fellow travelers on the path of the bean, Wheel of Ka is officially back
again
in the studio. We're recording our Misery episode.
Holy shit.
It's been a minute.
Oh my God, we read this book in the fall.
I love that 2 seconds into the podcast, we already have the first curse word from Steve.
That's me.
I love it, baby.
No, we're back.
That's how you know we're back. Steve's out here cursing up a storm.
Oh, man.
It's freaking beautiful.
Ugh.
So there's a lot for us to talk about. We're going to dive into the Stephen King book, Misery.
Yes.
I do think it's worth at least us touching on why it took us so long to do this episode.
We did it last time when we took a little break, so I think it makes sense.
Yeah, so we had originally planned to record this late fall of 2023.
Correct.
And then I forget why we originally rescheduled the first time.
It was me. I forget why, too. Schedule things, and then we were looking for the house, and then we got the house.
Well, you bought a house?
Yeah, we bought a house. So Frankie turned two.
The original record, we had to reschedule, forget why. You buy a house.
What a month.
And that takes a month of your life easily,
it was
if not
a lot.
More. And then as soon as you are moved in, then it's the holidays.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was Christmas.
Yep. So the holidays happen. Your daughter turns two.
She turns two.
My son turns three.
Unreal.
I get pneumonia.
Yeah, fuck. Yeah, it was so pneumonia. Yeah. And here we are on February 1st of 2024 to bring you Misery.
God, it blinked our eyes and like 4 months of us trying to record disappeared.
Yeah.
Just disappeared.
And I don't know about you though. I mean, this book stuck with me. So even though we're probably not going to be as sharp as we would a few weeks out, a month away from the book, this one fucking dug into me. So
I took a moment while folding laundry and just had no music on, no podcast playing. And I just put my mind back into Misery and found how easy it was to walk back into this world. And suddenly I remembered a lot that I had thought I'd forgotten, like Annie being the queen of bees, which we can talk about later.
Well, and you know, I think the other thing is too, we have to give ourselves some credit. We've been doing this now for what, 3 or 4 years, maybe longer than that at this point. And so I feel like we know our own rhythm and we remember these books. We do so much thinking now around the Dark Tower for the podcast that it's hard to forget these books, at least the ones we've read so far.
I mean, we're close to having a PhD in Stephen King. We're close to it.
I mean, and this book,
We're like the breakers that work for the Tet Corporation.
That's right.
That are trying to find all the tower connections so that we can see what the Crimson King's next move might be.
We're the Ted Bradigans of the world.
Also, I am recovering from pneumonia, so if you hear me cough like, now that's why, and it's easier to just cough than to pause and edit out. I hope you don't mind I coughed on the pod.
Please.
All right, so let's roll up our sleeves, man. Let's do this. Oh, few things to mention about the podcast before we get into it. One, Sleep and Sorcery is Laurel's podcast. Ugh. It's doing incredibly well.
It's so good.
She has a book coming out. The hard copy is available now to pre-order.
It is. It's beautiful.
Or to order. And then the paperback is available to pre-order. You can go to www.midnightmyth.com to go ahead and order the book. And if you have trouble sleeping and want to listen to beautifully written fantasy, folklore, and mythology-inspired sleep stories, it is a phenomenal podcast to help you fall asleep. As always, you can listen to our podcast, The Midnight Myth, where Laurel and I dish on history, philosophy, mythology, and how those subjects bubble up into our popular storytelling. We are also behind on Midnight Myth because I had pneumonia.
Life.
And we couldn't go ahead and record, so we have a Midnight Myth episode planned on episode 3, Revenge of the Sith, that will conclude our Star Wars prequel series.
Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, we did. Well, we've done. Thanks
I got
for
the high ground.
By the way, thank you for listening to the Midnight Myth for our episodes on episode 1 and episode 2. No,
I listened to the Midnight Myth. I've listened.
Steve, do you have any news on your podcast, Mythic Thunderlute?
Oh my God, I wish. So Mythic Thunderlute, it's a D&D podcast musical that you can find on Spotify. The first half of a season. It's a monster to produce, and it is 6 or 7 of us in all different parts of the United States. But it is a wonderfully funny, if you like Dungeons & Dragons, if you like musicals, if you like rock music, I would check it out, I would admit. And if you like comedy, it is a stupid stoner comedy musical, and there will be more episodes coming soon. In fact, I believe there is a prequel episode that was just released about a month ago that's up on Spotify now that you can check out.
I had no idea, dude.
Yeah, it's
I got to listen to that.
Yeah, you should. It's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's pretty neat.
100%. Mythic Thunderlute.
There's a new character you get to meet, actually.
Ooh. Yeah. Mythic Thunderlute, one of my all-time favorite podcasts.
It's a blast.
It is so good. They write original music. It's so entertaining. You laugh the whole time. It is just one of the most well-done podcasts I've ever heard.
Thank you.
Hands down.
Thank you.
Couldn't recommend it enough. Let's see. Is there any other things? Oh, just so you know, guys, I'm no longer on Twitter. Well, yeah, I'll caveat that. I deleted Twitter from my phone. Mm-hmm. And since having done that, I have not been on Twitter or X. I don't like calling it X. I've not been on Twitter since I deleted it from my phone. And my goodness, is my life better?
Yeah, less anxious.
So if you want to reach me, Twitter used to be the best way. I apologize to everyone, Wheel of Cough fan, Midnight Myth fan, or just someone I'd like to chat with on Twitter that I'm not there anymore. You can find me on Facebook at Derek Jones, but there's a lot of Derek Joneses out there. I'm torn by it because Twitter is owned by an anti-Semite, disgusting monster of a human.
He's a weirdo.
And then Facebook is owned by a android soulless monster, disgusting of a human. So it's like, oh, I'm no longer on Twitter, but I'm on Facebook. Is that better?
No.
No, it's not.
I got rid of all. I'm getting rid of them, but I'm not. They're not on my phone.
Yeah.
And I feel way less anxious.
I genuinely miss the Wheel of Cod Dark Tower fans, and that may be enough to get me to put the app back on my phone.
I mean,
I really do miss it.
We're still going to put this stuff up on Twitter because that is where the bulk of our folks are from. We're just not on it.
If you're promising that, because if I don't have it,
I'll put it up.
You don't have it.
I'll put it up. I can put it up.
We'll figure it out. Yeah, we'll figure it out. It's not a big deal. I'm not on Twitter, but you can find me on Facebook. I tried Threads. Totally side tangent. I tried Threads, thought it was cool, and then for like 3 months straight, nothing but porn bots started following me.
Nice.
And I'm like, I don't have time for
this. I'm in.
Yeah, I don't.
Sign me up. Oh, that's on Threads?
That's on Threads.
Yep, gonna have to sign up for Threads now.
Go for it, dude. So Misery, man. Misery is the story of Paul Sheldon, a famous author, getting drunk in a snowstorm in Colorado after he finishes his book and being crashing his car and being found by Annie Wilkes, a nurse who, quote unquote, nurses him back to health. She undoubtedly saves his life, but then what follows is the slow and systematic psychological and physical torture and mutilation of Paul under the hands of Annie Wilkes, who Paul learns is a longtime successful serial killer who uses her connections and knowledge of being a nurse at first to kill babies that are being born and while she's a acting nurse, and then to elderly patients, and then just to regular patients, until they almost catch her, but she ends up escaping justice and now lives alone. It just so happens that Paul's Misery series of books happen to also be Annie's favorite books. Paul ends up trying to break his addiction to the drugs that he's being fed. A police officer comes to look for him. He tries to call for help, gets the police officer killed. And in the end, he ends up overcoming Annie and escaping, but not after many parts of his body, including his foot and his thumb, are chopped off. And he ends up permanently psychologically scarred, even though Annie burns his only manuscript of the book he wants to write and forces him to rewrite a new Misery book. In it, we have lots of things, lots of commentary about writing, about fiction, about fandom. But I mean, that's it in a nutshell. It was famously made into a movie.
It was.
That, oh my God, the woman who played Annie Wilkes, I'm blanking on her name. She's a famous actor.
Oh, yeah.
What's her name? She won an Oscar.
No, hold on.
What's her name?
It's going to come to me.
If only I had a networked computer that I could
see it. I can see
Google
it right in my head.
I can see it too, but I forget her name.
Because she was also in The Office.
Kathy Bates. Thank you, Google.
You know, I feel like... Kathy Bates. I feel like I should have my acting degree revoked for that. It's Kathy Bates, of course.
That is a sin worthy of undegreeing you?
I know.
That's how bad that is?
Well, yeah.
It's not like you forgot
she's a
Meryl
legend.
Streep.
No, yeah, Kathy Bates. Kathy Bates.
Yeah, she is a legend.
You know?
All right, you no longer have an acting degree.
Done.
Yeah, sorry, man. You got undegreed.
Can I get the money back?
No.
Damn.
It's not how undegreed works. You still
that makes sense.
Paid the money.
Yeah, that's fine. Oh, and it's also James Caan. Let's not forget.
Yes, the immortal James Caan.
And that's pretty much it.
God, what does it say about us that we both know James Caan but forgot Kathy Bates' name?
We're the patriarchy.
We really like The Godfather, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because James Caan is in that. So let's talk about this book. What
Please.
Do you got about the kind of history, when it was written, how it relates to The Dark Tower?
So I have all this, and I also have a couple of quotes from Mr. King himself. So the book was published on June 8th, 1987. Fun fact, that's like 17 days before I was born, which is interesting. It won the Bram Stoker Award for Novel in 1987, and it was nominated for the 1988 World Fantasy Award for Best Novel. It placed fourth on the bestsellers list that year, and again, adapted into an Academy Award-winning film, and actually won an Oscar in 1990, and it's directed by Rob Reiner.
No way.
Yeah. Didn't know that until today.
The director of The Princess Bride directed Misery.
Uh-huh.
That man can do a lot of things.
Pretty sure he was in All in the Family, too.
Rob Reiner?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was an actor.
Oh, I believe
it. I could be wrong. I'm throwing all kinds of shit out of there. We'll fact check this at the end.
Yeah.
There was also, I did not know this, there was a theatrical production in 2015 with Laurie Metcalf and Bruce Willis. Laurie Metcalf being the aunt in Roseanne.
Oh.
It was in the theater. They made it into a stage play. Never knew that.
No idea.
Again, acting card revoked.
Real quick.
Yeah.
Rob Reiner was in all of them.
Yes. He was the son-in-law. I thought so.
That was him.
I thought so. The critical reception for the book was very positive. It gained praise for avoiding fantasy elements of his past works and noticed the novel's parallels to his own life and relationship with his fans and celebrity. And a little side tangent, there is a version of Annie Wilkes in the Castle Rock TV show on Hulu, which I thought was pretty good. I enjoyed it. She's the focus of the second season.
The show Castle Rock?
Yes.
Oh, yes. I did enjoy that show.
I thought it was good. So a couple things. So inspiration came from the book. This is I think you're going to find this interesting. So inspiration for the book came from his reaction of his fans, the reaction that they had for Eyes of the Dragon. So many of his fans rejected that book because it was an epic fantasy with virtually no horror that made his reputation. So fans were pissed about Eyes of the Dragon, and this is what he wrote in response to that.
I am imprisoned by my fans, and I want to kill them.
Isn't it nuts? Isn't that nuts?
Wow!
Isn't that crazy? I did not know that leading up to this. This is why I always do the history after we read the book, because that would have colored the way I looked at it.
It would have for me too.
You know? So another source for the book apparently was Stephen King's addiction to drugs and alcohol and his struggle to get sober. He stated, quote, "Take the psychotic nurse in Misery, which I wrote when I was having such a tough time with dope. I knew what I was writing about. There was never any question. Annie was my drug problem, and she was my number one fan. God, she never wanted to leave."
Oof.
And another quote, "When further addressing the idea of whether the character of Paul Sheldon was based on he himself, King stated that, quote, in certain ways he was, but in ways where every character is a part of the author in some way. A direct quote is, it would be fair enough to ask, I suppose, if Paul Sheldon in Misery is me. Certain parts of him are, but I think you'll find that if you continue to write fiction, every character you create is partly you." And I believe that. I completely believe that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so the two big takeaways for me there are just the Eyes of the Dragon connection, which literally in our earth is directly connected to the Dark Tower. And the fact that, you know, this was his response to his fans. And I don't know about you, man, but that's a pretty brutal response, this book.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't think King likes us very much.
I don't think so either, and but I get it.
You know, an interesting quote that I had highlighted that I wanted to bring up later as a potential tower connection, but I kind of want to bring up in response to what you just said, because I think it may sort of crystallize some of King's view of fiction, King's view of himself, and maybe the view of this book. So here's the quote. "She told him what had happened, and he remembered it as she told him, and he supposed it was good to know how you happened to end up with your leg shattered. But the manner by which he was coming to this knowledge was disquieting. It was as if he was a character in a story or a play, a character whose history is not recounted like history, but created like fiction." And in this, Paul is being told of his accident by Annie. Mm-hmm. He hasn't really understood that he's fully imprisoned.
Yeah.
And here he is thinking of his own life and what had happened to him, told to him more like a character in a story, as opposed to what really happened, which history is very plain and matter of fact.
Sure.
This did happen. This didn't happen. This is why. This is what happened because of what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And one of the ways I think that's a tower reference is Stephen King being a character in the Dark Tower.
Sure.
Makes it very metafiction. And here we have a moment where Paul Sheldon kind of realizes he's in a book.
Yeah.
That this is not actually reality, but a novelization, which to me kind of crystallizes the whole metaphor of, I'm Stephen King, I'm addicted to dope,
yeah.
I'm super famous, my fans hated my last book, so I'm going to write this book that is with a character who has, he doesn't fully go meta in this. Paul Sheldon doesn't come to believe he's a character.
No.
He doesn't come to learn it.
No.
But in this one moment, the fourth wall is being slightly, not peeled, but like a little crack in it.
Oh, sure.
That he's looking through.
Sure.
Which absolutely. I think it says something that you can be a rich, famous, successful artist and your life can still suck.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, especially when you're an addict. I mean, I've seen it. You know, being an artist, being a musician, I've seen brilliant, brilliant people be ruined. I'm sure you have too.
I have.
You know, and I think the interesting part about it is that King has no choice but to respond in a way, it is how do I put it? Like, it is sort of narcissistic.
And the other word, so yes, but I would go one step forward. It's also solipsistic.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's the whole universe is around me and my thoughts and my ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it's interesting now that King has the status that he is, mm-hmm. that he can write whatever he wants and no one can stop him.
Yeah, well.
It's interesting how Paul Sheldon hates the character Misery and the novels of Misery.
He hates the success that he's given himself.
However, when Annie forces him to write the story and when she forces him to not cheat.
Yeah.
Meaning that you can't just write a plot loophole.
Correct.
And he actually has to flesh out the story. He continually goes back to how easy it is, how mm-hmm. comfortable it is, mm-hmm. how vivid it is, how much he is recognizing that this is his best work. So even under duress, physical assault, drug addiction, imprisonment, psychological torture, Paul Sheldon is able to write his best book.
Yeah, it's insane.
So there is an element of like, hey, all of this, if we're taking the metafiction, all of this adversity, all of this heartache, all of the fan pressure and how much that torments him forces Paul to become a better writer, which maybe he's also saying forces King to become a better writer.
I mean, I don't see how it couldn't. You know, I mean, when you're that successful, you're that big. I mean, I think from one angle, your fandom, the people that the reason you are a success, you're going to listen to those people in some way. Because really, they do dictate your success. Because at any point in time, people could have stopped buying Stephen King books.
No more King.
And if they stopped buying, right, they stopped buying those books, Stephen King goes away. That's why artists can't make any more fucking money these days. It's like Spotify. You know, you get paid like, I don't know, like a half a cent for 1,000 plays or whatever it is. You know, for the exposure. Where in this model, well, yeah, if collectively we decided, man, you know what? We don't want you to be a success anymore. You won't be.
Yeah, that's a fair point, dude. You know? That's a fair point. So hit me with, did you like this book? What are your reactions to it?
All right.
Give me the Steve unfiltered, Dark Tower, not Dark Tower, however, give me what you think of Misery, dude.
So for folks who have listened to this podcast before, you haven't heard that I had like a massive fear of clowns. And it really helped me get over that. I don't have a massive fear of people, but I'll tell you what, this book scared me more than any of the books that we've read.
Including it?
Yes.
Okay.
I will tell you, Annie Wilkes may be, for me personally, the scariest antagonist the scariest character that I've ever read. And there's a part of me that feels like she just, it's such a tangibly written evil doer. You know, in a lot of these books, in a lot of media period, the evil doer, there's always something very heightened about them. You know, I think about classic villains, Darth Vader, the Joker, you know, these really heightened Pennywise. Very heightened characters who are spiritual, you know. Even thinking through mythology in Odin and thinking through, you know, the Lord of the Rings, like thinking anything that has magic base. Annie Wilkes is a real fucking woman. She's a middle-aged woman from the fucking Midwest who killed a bunch of babies, got away with it. This woman is on our streets. She's in our hospitals. She's in our homes. That shit is fucking terrifying. She's terrifying. I loved this book. I hated this book. I hated Stephen King through parts of this book. But I enjoyed it.
So I'm going to go. I love that. I'm going to go and tell you, if it weren't for the podcast, I would not have finished this book.
I fully understand that.
In particular, when she chops off, I forget if it's his thumb or his finger.
Oh, the birthday cake.
And then
it's his finger.
And she puts it on his birthday cake.
Yeah.
It's not his birthday. And makes him eat the cake.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
I don't need to read this book anymore.
Yeah.
I really don't. And maybe it had been because I have seen the movie and I know, all right, he escapes in the movie. Maybe it's very different in the book, but he's probably going to escape in the book. And at that point, I would have just stopped reading. It is very rare for me to start a book, a movie,
anything,
a podcast, a video game series, and not take it to
something
completion.
That tells a story and not finish it.
And I will, even if it's really bad, is very, very rare. This one, what kept me going was this podcast and my dedication to it. This was the first Stephen King book I actively dislike. I did not like this book at all. I want to caveat by saying,
sure.
I don't think it's poorly written.
No.
Don't think I was able to walk into this world. I do think it's brilliantly written. I think everything you said about Annie Wilkes is a freaking home run. No disagreement. It's not like I read the book and I'm like, I've got issue here, issue there.
Yeah, no. The way it impacted you emotionally.
I love horror.
Yeah.
Except for body horror.
Yeah, and this is that book.
I don't like watching it, and I realized through this book, I really don't like reading it.
Yeah.
I like reading it way less. I can make it through a body horror movie and be like, it's not my thing.
It's a movie, but when your brain's making up the visuals, it's a different thing.
When I'm smelling Annie Wilkes's breath and I'm feeling the ice cream sticky dribble on her shirt as she's chopping a piece of Paul Sheldon off.
You know what's fucked up?
I'm just like, fuck this. This sucks.
You know what's crazy?
What the fuck is wrong with me?
No,
Why am I reading this?
No. You know, I think it's interesting that you bring this up because prior to this podcast, you know, this podcast is what has allowed me to kind of face my mental fear when it comes to horror entertainment, because I've been able since then to watch TV shows and films, and like it's actually allowed me to enjoy horror without it being completely like an existential shutdown of everything in my brain. And so in a weird way, like I kind of think like, well, man, am I fucked up? Because I liked the book made me like it made me feel barbaric at certain points. And I feel sometimes like, I might be fucked up, dude. Well, we all are, but you know what I mean?
This is a little ahead of where we want to go, but Steve and I have started reading the next Stephen King book that we want to
tackle. Yeah, which we'll mention.
We'll mention at the end, but we decided we wanted to read it. We've started reading it.
It's
And then I had this moment in that book being like, is there something wrong with me? This is my favorite. This is not only my favorite author. I have a tattoo dedicated to Stephen King on me. I'm maybe I'm more messed up than I want to give credit to because I love this. But here's the thing. I will say Misery was undoubtedly one of the best of his books in terms of what Stephen King is trying to get me to feel and think. I'm feeling and thinking.
Well, it always reminds me of that quote that you talked about where he's, you know, like he'll write horror, he'll be very thoughtful about it. But in the very end, like he has no qualms with being disgusting.
And gross.
And this is that book. This is 100%. There's a part of me who thinks like, did Stephen King have to write this to let criticism from his fans go? Was this the death, you know, of the critic, like of him paying attention to that criticism? Because it's so disgusting. I mean, the movie's great. The movie is great, but it does not do any justice to the horror, which I think is interesting that this book got criticized for not having horror elements to it. I think people sometimes mistake horror with the supernatural.
I do too.
You know, because this is the most fucking terrifying thing I've ever read is Misery. Hands down.
It is the most miserable book I've ever read.
Because even with Pennywise, bro, I can go, yep, it's an alien. Yep, it's born from evil, from a town. I can disassociate from it because it's not one of us. Annie is one of us. She's like, any motherfucker you can meet on the street, man. You know? And here she is finding this dude, reviving him to life to fucking try to kill him all over it. Like, it's...
slowly torture him.
And, like, reading it in the fall, like, moving into the winter. It's genius, but it is horrifying. It's absolutely horrifying.
And a few things that I think are very different about this book compared to other Stephen King books we've done, and which is, this is not a criticism, just the thing I noticed. King books are known for being incredibly long with a lot of really interesting, well-defined characters.
Yeah, this is not it.
This book is not long compared to Stephen King. It has essentially two characters. Mm-hmm. There are a few other characters that pop up here and there, but essentially two characters. Stephen King's books are very kinetic. A lot of action happens. We've talked all the time about how King books just start and they go.
Yeah.
And then, like, you just got to keep up with the pace and the momentum. This is a book that's very, despite it being shorter with less characters, it's also very slow in that one character is confined to a bed high the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, the entire book.
For the almost the whole duration of the book. So you have it being very different. Most Stephen King books will involve some element of supernatural, magic, or fantasy.
Yeah, there's none.
Almost every book has something of that somewhere in there. I didn't find a reference. If you know out there, Wheel of Ka fans, of a reference to fantasy or magic we missed, let me know. But there was nothing fantastical or magical.
No.
And I think this is, to your point about it being so scary, is how mundane it is.
And how real it could be. I mean, it could happen.
I completely agree.
It's terrifying.
I completely agree. So you are happy that we read it. You enjoyed it. I can say unequivocally, I will never read this book again. And the sooner I can put it out of my mind, the better.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I would agree with that. I don't ever need to read this book again.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
If it weren't for us doing the podcast, would you have finished it?
Absolutely.
See, I would have put it
down. I'm fucked up, dude. I got really, I did. I absolutely. I actually read this book very quickly.
You did.
Very quickly. And I don't know if that says something about me or not, but.
At the very least, that says one thing. Body horror, I really struggle with.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't struggle with it.
I don't think I
do.
You know what? You know, it's really like the psychological, it's the horror and terror of children that I struggle with. That's the part with King that I really, and even before Frankie, I've really.
For those, if you're just tuning in, Frankie is
that's my daughter. Yeah. Even before her, like any kind of harm or terror to children has always fucked with me.
Yeah. I think that's fair. And you're like, hey, these are grown adults. Let them carve each other up.
Yeah. In a weird way.
Let them carve each other up.
Yeah. It's strange, but like, yeah.
That's great.
I don't know how else to put that.
I
mean, the book is fucked. It's fucked up. I mean, there were moments, I will say, this is probably the book that I put down the most, even though I read it quickly. This is the one that I threw my Kindle across the room during this book.
At what point?
When she runs the lawnmower over the cop's head.
See, that's another point where if it weren't for the podcast, I would have put the book down and been like, no, thank you.
I didn't see that one coming. I'm not going to lie. I did not see that one coming. I know that in the movie, I think she shoots at the cops, but
the cop in the movie is old and grizzled.
This is like a kid.
Yeah.
Again, it's like a young kid.
She stabs with a cross from where her cow or pig died and then runs him over with a lawnmower.
Yeah. Well, the pig that she kills.
Correct.
Ugh, fucking crazy. When you find out that moment in that book that she's a serial killer and she's murdering babies, that is the moment in that book that it really did change for me. I'm like, whoa, we're not playing with a person who is just on a one-off, lost it a little bit. This person desperately needed help a long time ago.
And are now totally irredeemable.
And, you know, I think it's interesting that it is a woman. that he writes it as a woman. I think, you know, that there are things about it that make it more terrifying. I think I could expect this from a man in a way.
Well, one of King's themes that we have seen time and time again is him to take something that would normally not be threatening, not be scary,
and
not
make it that
what
way.
We think of.
Yeah.
Pennywise the Clown,
yeah.
Great example. I remember one of the scariest scenes in 11-22-63.
Yeah.
Where they're at a football game and everyone's chanting name of the quarterback, Jim Law.
Oh, yeah.
Being really terrifying.
Yeah.
And now Annie Wilkes, a retired nurse living by herself in Colorado, should be the person that invites the trick-or-treaters in for cookies.
Yeah.
Is a serial killer.
He's a serial killer.
He really has a knack for taking things, symbols, ideas, cultural zeitgeist or touch points, mm-hmm. and turning them to making them incredibly scary.
And I think that's why he sells as many copies of books as he does, because he makes the everyday thing seem relatable. Even if it's from relation in terror, it's relatable in some way. You've met an Annie Wilkes at some point in time in your life.
A nurse who maybe was a little too aggressive putting that IV in. You're like, yo, what the heck? What?
Yeah, seriously. You meet somebody at a bar. You're having a couple drinks. You talk to them. You see they're a little unhinged. You know what I mean? You've seen that. You've been around those people. And I think that's what, at least for me, what makes these King books that are not rooted in the supernatural, why they're still incredibly scary, if not more terrifying for me than when they are rooted in that.
I will agree that of the like scary factor, mm-hmm. though this one wasn't like looking over my shoulder, there could be a ghost there.
Right.
This one was the book that produced the most guttural, visceral
Easy.
Reaction.
Could you fucking imagine? Could you imagine, bro? Even if you're not famous, who cares? Let's take that piece of the story out of it. You're on the side of the fucking road. You're in Colorado. You get snowbound, right? You get passed out. All of a sudden, you wake up. You can't fucking feel anything. You're all drugged up. You're in this woman's house. That in and alone. You play a video game. You play one of those Resident Evil games. Nowadays, that's what this is. That's what it feels like. That shit is fucking terrifying. And my anxiety, you know what would probably happen, bro? I'd probably wake up, have a stroke, and die. That's exactly what would happen. I'd wake up, I'd have a stroke, and be dead.
You and I would just be like,
it's done. There's no book to write about me.
I just unplugged. By the way, while we're laughing here, this quote that I had highlighted back to our original point about this being a book about writing, about not liking your fans, etc. This is from, I forget what page, so I'll do the quote. This is Paul Sheldon thinking, quote, "It was never for you, Annie, or all the other people out there who signed their letters, your number one fan. The minute you start to write for all those people are at the other end of the galaxy. I'm sorry, the minute you start to write, all those other people are at the other end of the galaxy or something. It was never for my ex-wives or my mother, for my father. The reason authors almost always put a dedication on their book, Annie, is because their selfishness even horrifies themselves in the end."
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, you know, thinking about this book from an artist's perspective, you know, from someone who's written music, performed in things, paid to have things done, have had people pay for my music. There is a sense of selfishness to it. You know, I mean, why do we feel, this is going to be crazy, but why do we feel like putting our opinion, our voice, our whatever it is into the universe, exactly, literally what the fuck we're doing right now? Why is that important enough, you know, to put down, you know, I think it's just a question. I think it's important. I think it's important for everyone to express themselves. I think something that has separated me in my artistic life is that I've never really been one to feel like, oh, my art, it's not meant to be shared, or it's a very serious thing. It's so serious. I don't know. I've never looked at it that way. You know, and I think I see where Paul Sheldon / Stephen King is coming from. It's not when you start to write for your fans, you get pigeonholed. You get stuck. You know, like I feel bad for musicians or bands and specifically who like go out there and they write a certain kind of music, a certain genre for a little while. And then they decide, you know what, let's fucking change it up. And either your fan base eats it up and it's like, they're so innovative. Or they're like, fuck you, go back and do the old shit. That is hard. That's tough.
I think that is all fair. So to your original question, why do we create art? Right? Like, no, dude, you're fine. You're on the map. This is the map.
You know?
And you're on it.
That's me.
We're on the map. Why do we create?
Yeah,
I think that is a multifaceted, not easy way to answer. On a micro level, those answers are going to be so subjective and really hard to pin down.
Yeah,
why
sure.
do you create versus sure. me versus them? On a macro level, humans creating things, whether it is artistic innovations in agriculture, to innovations in engineering, to science,
sure.
why we try to create, I think there is a connective tissue that there's a spark within humanity that wants us to make our mark upon existence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that mark is fundamentally selfish because the mark is about me making the mark.
Well,
but maybe it's also about trying to manipulate and control our circumstances to help us make sense of why we're here.
I mean, I would agree more with the latter than I would with the former. I mean, from the reason why I do it personally. You know, for as cynical as I am, there is a part of me that feels like a romantic, especially when it comes to the arts and food, you know, and like cooking.
But I'm also a believer. Once you put it out into the world in a very like legal commercial sense, it still belongs to you if it's profitable and makes money.
Yeah.
But once you actually release something to the world,
it's not yours anymore.
It becomes less about you.
Yeah.
And I do think in America, currently, in particular, the era that Stephen King writes,
mm-hmm.
we sort of valorize the creator at the expense of understanding what they create.
Yeah.
A good example of this is the phenomenon of Taylor Swift,
mm-hmm.
where, and I say this as someone who adores her music, but mm-hmm. there's an entire cult of personality around her, separate from the music, maybe originally started with the music, but about her, what she's wearing, I'm like, well, once the music's created, it's not really about Taylor Swift anymore.
Right.
It's about me listening to it, you listening to it, us, our conversations about it.
Yeah.
I feel very similar with a popular artist, the Taylor Swift of books, or should I say, Taylor Swift is the Stephen King of music.
Yeah.
You know, like the Stephen King of music, Taylor Swift, that once it's created, it's not about you. And in this book, we see this perverse relationship where someone can force their will on the creator, on the artistic creator, not the like divine creator.
Yeah.
You know, and force their will and make them manipulate the story so they can get it the way they want. And I feel like that is one of the fundamental perversions of this, mm-hmm. that, you know, artistic creators should be able to create in their own ways.
Sure.
And when they do, though, it stops being about them.
Well, yeah, and it's open to interpretation once you put it out there. I mean, it's artistic expression. It can mean, you know, especially like you think about a song, you know, or even a book in this case, you know, in Annie Wilkes' case. It doesn't matter how much or how little you connect to it or how much or how little the artist connects to it. Once it's out there, it's open for interpretation no matter what that means.
A great example is most diehard Stephen King fans are not Dark Towerists.
Correct.
Right? Correct. We're different in that we started with the Dark Tower mm-hmm. and then we went back to King. Our perspective on King is skewed by mutual love of the Dark Tower.
Right.
Where most fans that have been reading him for decades upon decades have been reading those books as they've come out.
And like, oh yeah, the Dark Tower is good, but it's not the focus of why they got into King to begin with.
So our experience of it has completely divorced from King as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, it's like, I really love this 7-book series. It's my favorite book series of all time.
Eight.
An appendage. But thank you for keeping me honest. I don't consider the 8th book.
I don't think either of us do.
Yeah, as part of the Dark Tower.
God, we also read it in a stupid...
We did.
Anyway.
But that being stated, I think the interesting thing with this is, yes, is Stephen King getting revenge on his readers? Are the readers getting revenge on King?
That's the other thing. Is he getting a revenge on himself? Does he think the things that he writes are not worthy of the fandom that he gets? You know, I mean, he tells us to not take it so seriously. Does he not take it so... I would find it hard to believe that he doesn't take it seriously.
Yes, but one thing King has said in many books over and over again, don't overthink this shit.
Yeah, I mean, it's true.
He tells us that all the time.
He tells us to stop doing what we're doing.
And yet we dedicate a podcast to overthinking it.
I mean, how could you not? You know?
So where do you put Misery in comparison to non-Dark Tower Stephen King?
Well, for me... Yeah, I mean, for me, it's got to be up there with It. It was so scary, man. It really made me rethink why we're doing this podcast. You know, part of it for me in the beginning, it really was about the Dark Tower, but it's changed. It's like this podcast has forced me to face certain fears. And there was a lot of this book that, like, if anything of like this ever happened to me, you know, I have this weird fear of, like, I mean, I'm a white man in America, so statistically it's very low, but of, like, being kidnapped and murdered and just, like, you know, fucking tortured and killed.
By the way, whether that's statistically likely or not has no bearing on whether you have that fear.
No, you know, but, like, there might be listeners out there who are like, it would probably, you know, it would be lower for you, which is true. But that there is this, like, irrational fear of that. And reading this book, you know, I really felt, much like I did with The Losers Club, that both Paul and Annie were very, very real for me. Very tactile. Now, I have seen the movie prior to the book, but I got to be honest with you. I've always thought this. Kathy Bates might be one of the most perfect casting choices in film history for her to be Annie Wilkes. Unbelievable. Didn't really like James Caan in a casting choice. Brilliant actor. Great performance. Not really who I saw as Paul Sheldon.
So when you're reading the book?
Yeah, I see Paul a little younger than when they cast James Caan. I see him a little less. Like, when I think James Caan, right, I'm thinking fucking Sonny Corleone.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like, he's a badass. You want to hear something crazy? My mentor, my acting mentor, was one of the first, he was Sanford Meisner's teaching assistant, and James Caan was one of the first students that he was in his class when he was a teaching assistant.
Wild.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So, like, James Caan, I've always had a crazy amount of respect for him, but in this, it's not like his performance is brilliant. I think for me, I would have seen someone else. Now, who? I'm not entirely sure.
I will tell you exactly.
Who do you see?
So I agree with the book to the movie that seeing the book character Paul Sheldon, the movie character Paul Sheldon...
It's different.
...is very different.
It's different.
This is not to say that watching the movie, I thought anything about the movie casting...
At all.
But for me, reading the book, I saw Paul Sheldon as Stephen King. In my mind's eye.
I mean, I think that's fair.
He became what I know of Stephen King at that age.
I think that's fair.
Skinny.
Yeah.
Little cocky, little quick.
Yeah.
Little like, I'm from Maine and I'm a great writer and having to eat his humble pie.
Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense to me. I don't see and that's the other thing. Like, James Caan, to me... And I know we're talking about the movie here, but from the connection with the book, he's just so strong. He's such a powerful actor that to make him this guy that's like, oh, he can get the fuck out of that bed. Easy.
That's fair. That's totally fair. So this to you, just to recap, is your second favorite non-Tower book?
No, I would put it in that tier. It's probably in terms of favorite non-Tower book. I would probably put it like third or fourth.
Under
It. Under 112263. And probably for me, under Salem's Lot.
Fair.
And then right after Misery would come The Mist.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Totally cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about you? This is my last?
This is my least
favorite.
This is my least favorite.
I get it.
I did not like this book.
I get it.
Again, not to...
No. It's not a criticism.
It's not a criticism of the writing.
No.
I...
That's how it made you feel, bro.
Hated reading this book.
Yeah, it was fucking hard.
I really did not enjoy it. I did not have a good time doing it. I found it lacking joy. I found it to be intensely specific about what's going on with this one man's body and how it's broken, drug addicted, and tortured. I found it incredibly specific about his psychological makeup and how that's drug addicted and tortured. And without a positive counterpoint that I desperately needed, I found myself really miserable.
Yeah, there's no, well, yeah.
Reading it.
Yeah.
And I think
he wants you to fucking feel that way.
And I completely respect the prowess to make me feel that way.
And think about this. Think about it from the point of view that this is one of the first books where Stephen King, the writer, talks about that his inspiration is his addiction. It's one of the first times we really hear him come out and say that. And you can feel it in this. I mean, I bet he was boozed up. He's probably high as fuck on heroin because he had that during the spell. Think about this. This is 87. This is a time when he was like, oh yeah, I'm mostly clean. You know what? Fuck it. Let's get back into it. I'm the man. I could do whatever I want. I made so much money selling books. And fuck you, fans. I'm going to write this book. Fuck you. How dare you? Imagine, you know what it's like. Imagine being that high and that drunk and you hear your imposter in your brain. Fuck you. Fuck you. I know how much money you made me, but you know what? It's me. I'm the genius. Does Paul Sheldon exist without the Annie Wilkes's of the world? Probably not. Not to say he deserves it. I'm just saying, like, it's.
No, I gotcha.
I see why Stephen King would write this bitter homage to us and his fans who see no wrong being done by him. You know, it's almost like he wants to freak us out. He wants to make us feel like shit. Like, fuck, especially this time, fuck you. Don't buy my books. Don't buy my books, but I need you. I need you to do it. Dude, addiction is hard. It's fucking hard.
Totally agree, dude.
And it really turns some really great people and does some really horrible things, you know?
That being stated, didn't like reading it.
Yeah.
You know, and like... At the end of the day, my reaction to Misery is more emotional than rational.
But I think it's fair. It's the most like in our world book that we've read. It's the most because there's nothing supernatural about it. Nothing.
And that being stated, I really admire and I'm really admire Stephen King for writing it. I admire how different it is from his other books. Mm-hmm. And I'm really glad we do this podcast so that I was able to push through and get to the end.
Yeah.
Because I honestly don't think without this podcast, I don't think I would have finished it.
No, I'm telling you, man. I wouldn't have. I could tell you right now.
This would have been one of those ones where I wouldn't push through. I'd put the book down and I'd be like, I'm done with Stephen King.
Yeah, I get it.
And I would have moved on.
Yeah.
You know, and because of this podcast I pushed through, I'm super glad I did.
Yeah.
I do think it's an amazingly well-written book. And that has helped me get to the next book and be like, okay, Misery's behind me. I'll never have to go back.
Yeah, I was just going to say, now you never, ever, ever have to do it again.
What about some Tower thoughts?
Well, see, this is the hard part about this book. I had a hard time connecting it while I was reading out of just outside of a couple of big things. So they're in Colorado. They're only a few miles from the town of Sidewinder, which is connected to The Shining. Same town, different time. And outside of that, I mean, it happens in the same Earth as ours that we know, based on some of the information that we have. It's not Keystone Earth. So I do think that that is a loose connection, but a connection. It's in the same world as The Shining, which we did conclude that that's on the path of the, one of the paths of the beam that is broken. So to me, that's the biggest connection outside of just the pure evil of Annie Wilkes. I mean, Annie Wilkes might as well just be the right hand of the fucking Crimson King, if you ask me. I mean, she is fucking, she reminds me of the Man in Black, bro. She's unpredictable. She's a fucking devil. She goes from being the sweetest, laughing maniacally, to fucking feeding this dude his hand in a birthday cake. I don't know. That's sociopathic.
See, I don't think she's the Man in Black.
I don't, really.
I think she's another character from the Dark Tower.
Oh, hit me. Oh, please. I love when we do this.
Before I get there, that's the finale.
Fuck me.
Just a few things. He is fed Keflex, the antibiotic.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So he is fed Keflex, which is the antibiotic that they use in the second book of the Dark Tower, the
Correct.
Drawing of the Three, when Roland has been poisoned by the Lobstrosities.
Uh-huh.
There's a moment where, I'm getting it up. They mention his faded blue eyes for Paul Sheldon.
Yeah, correct.
Just like Roland's.
Uh-huh.
There's a mention, you know, I put this in my notes and I don't remember the context, but the Sandpiper School is mentioned.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I forget the context. It's in my notes. They mentioned the Sandpiper School.
They Holy fuck.
Yeah.
That's the school that Jake went to, right?
Yes, it is.
That's oh, my God.
That Jake went to.
I think that might be the
school that Paul Sheldon went to. I don't remember because I didn't put it in my notes in
full. I missed that one.
Sandpiper, that's Jake's school.
Yeah, no shit.
You know, so another thing I would say is when Paul Sheldon is in his drug-induced stages,
it
reminds me of the shuffle
of
the Drawing of the Three.
Yeah.
Where Roland is in and out of consciousness and in and out of time. So it reminds me of that drug-induced specific for Paul Sheldon. He describes it as the waves coming in.
It's funny you bring up the waves because it reminds me of them eating the Popkins and going into Toad Ash for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very reminiscent of that for me.
So there's a phrase that Annie Wilkes uses a lot that I think will connect her to a particular character in the tower. So if there's a tower book that this is connected to, it's the Drawing of the Three.
Okay.
Drawing of the Three is about addiction. It's about the punishment of the body.
Mm-hmm.
It's about body mutilation.
Yeah.
It's about how do you endure when your body is suffering, when your mind is suffering from addiction. But Annie Wilkes as a serial killer is what? She's a doobie. Just like Jack Mort.
Oh.
She is Jack Mort.
Oh, my God.
She and Jack Mort are the same character. So Jack Mort, CPA.
Yep.
Annie Wilkes, registered nurse. Respected professions.
Yep.
They end up hiding within their respected professions to do their serial killing. Their killing is almost always masked as an accident.
Yeah.
You know, they are.
But it's highly premeditated.
Highly premeditated, masked as an accident. They're both obsessive compulsive.
Fucking fuck, dude.
They're both total narcissists. And they completely get off. They're both completely vindicated by their own actions. So to me, Annie Wilkes is Jack Mort on a different layer of the tower.
Okay, well, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Steve Goodalunas, and this is my final Wheel of Ka episode. There had to be a point in time in this moment where my mind was blown, and it's right now.
That makes
much sense.
Yep.
She has no emotion. She's undiagnosed bipolar schizophrenic.
Mm-hmm.
Everything is highly premeditated. She feels like she's doing good for society. She literally calls herself the angel of death.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, fuck. And she kills kids.
She's a doobie versus a don'tbie.
Wow.
You know, doobies do this just as Jack Mort
That's
does.
That's right.
Doobies do this.
That's right.
Don'tbies do that.
That's right. She doesn't curse.
Mm-hmm. She doesn't use profanity. She's highly respected until her fall, just as Jack Mort is highly respected. But everyone close is just like, something not right there.
Yeah.
There's something just missing in that
person. And then
she's
completely unhinged.
Mm-hmm. And then push comes to shove, will be a complete unhinged psychopath.
Jesus.
She's Jack Mort.
Yeah, that makes complete sense.
She is a force of death. A human force of death, not a supernatural force of death.
And completely unassuming. Like everything matches up with it. Everything.
Yep.
Fuck, dude.
She's Jack Mort, buddy.
Done. Check. Check.
Check. That is
ultimate Dark Tower link.
That is my Dark Tower
link. They really all can be.
And the whole time I'm reading this, I'm like, that's Jack Mort. That's Jack. Oh, man. This is, and I think, and the like.
Even to the pusher.
Yep.
Even to the name, the pusher, because she would inject drugs into the kid. Oh, fuck. Oh,
what?
Man.
And what is Jack Mort's door? The pusher.
Oh, man. Oh, fuck, dude. That's perfect.
Great, man.
Should we let everybody know what we're reading?
Yeah. So let me give a space.
Sorry.
Final thoughts on Mr. Oh, I almost spoiled it.
Oh, you did.
I almost spoiled it on Misery.
Final thoughts on Misery. No, I mean, I do think I'm glad I read it. I did enjoy it, but it is a book that I'll never read again. I don't need to.
And I think it's a necessary stop on the path of the beast.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, it's such a big moment in film history. It's a big moment in literary history. You can't skip this one.
And we wanted to do something classic Stephen King, and we did it. And I'm really glad that we did it. And I really admire this book.
Yeah.
So even though I don't like it, I admire and respect it.
Sure. Sure.
So what are we reading now?
Oh, well, ladies and gentlemen, Derek and I decided that we wanted to link this into another trilogy. And we are currently reading Mr. Mercedes. So we're going to do the Mr. Mercedes trilogy. We're Derek's pretty far ahead. I'm a little further behind, but we're running through that pretty quickly. So that should be the next episode. And then I don't know what the second book is called.
Finders Keepers?
Finders Keepers. I think you're right.
I think. We're like the worst Stephen King fans.
No, we're not. No. We just have terrible, short-term memories.
And we're also not Stephen King fans. We're Dark Tower fans.
That's right. That's right.
We're great Dark Tower fans who
terrible
are like
so-so
Stephen King fans. Yeah, I can't wait. Where I am about halfway done with Mr. Mercedes.
Yeah, it's
right
real
now.
Good. It's real good.
I was also sick and had nothing else to do but read.
You know, question, after we read this, should we watch the television series?
I guess the answer to that would be yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yes?
I think so.
Why not?
The guy I always forget his name, but the guy that plays Mad-Eye Moody is Bill Hughes, and that makes me really excited.
Oh, yeah.
That guy's
an incredible
actor.
Gleason.
Gleason. Yes.
His last name's Gleason.
I feel like it's Thomas.
No, that's not right.
That's wrong.
That's close.
I always think when someone says Gleason, I always think of Jackie Gleason.
He's also in
But
Brave
I'm like,
Heart.
This isn't... Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in Braveheart.
He is in Braveheart.
Long story short,
anyway.
We're reading Mr. Mercedes. Join along.
Real quick, though, I just want to say thank you to everybody who listens to this podcast for your patience. Truly, the last 5 months, like when Derek and I say that life, there are things that we get into and things that we don't, and life truly in this point in time just put a little roadblock in front of us. But rest assured, we are moving forward with it, and we do. Like I appreciate your patience. I know Derek does too, and we really appreciate that you take time out of your life, which is incredibly important, to listen to this tiny little podcast. So, from the bottom of my heart, thank you, and I hope you stick with us.
And we actually even debated, like, hey, should we
keep
doing
this? Yeah,
we
had this conversation.
And then we both came down to unequivocally like,
no, we have to.
Yes, of course.
It's too much joy. I enjoy it too much.
Yeah, same. It's way too much fun. I love reading Stephen King. Mm-hmm. Can't wait to do Mr. Mercedes.
Yes.
Long days and pleasant nights.
Long days and pleasant nights.